Well, last time our heroes turned to some good old-fashioned vigilante justice. It seems as though this time, revenge was a dish best served hot. Hopefully, they could discover a way to rescue their cloth companion. Here at McMallet's.
All right,
welcome to McMallet's Old Timey Podcast.
That's
I'm Joe McDonough, and I play a bear druid named Uther Thorborn. And as a level 3 druid, I get better spells. And I've been looking through my spell list to try to think of ways to fuck over Mitch with that item that he gave us where we can change 2 letters of any spell. And I got some doozies. I know it's 2. 2 letters, right?
Yeah, up to 2.
Up what? To 2.
Yeah.
2 goddamn letters.
And you can't fuck me over because I don't care. I just want you to do cool shit.
Can I do puppet and turn people into a Muppet?
I mean, yes, I guess.
Can you change hold person into wild person?
Yeah.
God, I'm so excited.
I mean, you gotta... Don't like... Get all the hype out up front, you know. Wait,
you don't know what I got available.
Sit on these.
It's called foreplay, Joe. You can't just jump into it like that.
That was the wild person, was maybe the tamest thing I came up with. So,
I'm also a person on McMallet's Old Timey Podcast and on this old school retro podcast with a man in the corner playing a jug. I play Harrowhawk of the Quetzic, who at 3rd level gets to turn invisible so I can finally get beyond the same level as Grace instead of being surprised all the time. Oh, wait, I just may be invisible and get surprised. Who knows?
I'm the GM, and I want to jump in here that it's called McMallet's old-fashioned RPG, and Grace turns invisible way more than a person of 3rd level can manage. And
we actually don't know how powerful she is.
Right. You guys are supposed to notice that. There's also another thing that she did, which should be like, huh, that's weird.
Yeah, I'm sure someone who was actually paying attention would notice that.
Joe noticed.
She casts a level 5
I noticed.
Magic missile.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. It was 7 missiles.
Oh, it was 7. I don't know. I don't remember it being a lot. I also like my character wasn't there anyway.
And you were swimming.
My character absolutely did not notice. Noticing things is for the smart characters. I'm here to do flips and have a duck that breathes lightning.
Do you do flips?
Okay, I beefed on that one flip.
So hard.
Here's a question. If there's someone like really powerful just hanging around you, like what do you do about that? What is there anything you can do? Just like accept it and just
it's like a Mr. Mixoplex from the DC universe, like go away, no please. No, I'm all powerful, I can bend reality, but you're annoying, deal with it.
We got a lot of people that are very powerful that have been around us, so maybe we just pit the powerful against the powerful.
Alright, so just a little, I'm gonna like lift
no up. We need more introductions, go.
Okay, go, and then I'm gonna do the thing. So that's Aaron and Pat, one of you.
Aaron, just play a harmonica. That's all you get.
Done, Aaron.
That's it. Also, go. I'd like to note that I rely heavily on dndbeyond.com, but I am not sponsored by them.
Getting his DMs.
Pat.
Yeah, I am, who am I? Theodore Gleam, sometimes. Yeah, and he had somewhat of a crisis of faith, and then he kind of forgot about it. Now he's just confused.
And then he burned down the crisis.
No, that was before.
Crisis averted.
Yeah, but then he forgot about the person who had made him have this crisis.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Is that a permanent thing?
No comment. It is currently active, I will say. I was going to say, the tiniest peek, I'm behind the curtain, I'm going to lift up a corner of the curtain and say, There are a lot of very powerful things around you all the time. It is part of my style of GMing. However, there are also some things which appear to be powerful and are not. And I leverage your knowledge of the system of Dungeons and Dragons against you in this endeavor. That is what I will say.
But against still always, us?
Yes.
So that means I'm way more powerful.
It's very possible.
We're all level 15.
So you're subverting power balance tropes.
Absolutely, all the time.
I love it.
But still, as always, act as your characters would act.
Everyone seems cool. This is nice. I'm having a good day. How are you?
So, last time, you guys stormed into the Church of Ultra Wolf. Well, I guess you cleaned up the snake situation with Uther, coming out with your lives and the...
And our bear.
Your lives, your bear, and this magical quill that allows you to alter... Well, allows the person who is holding it, whence they cast a spell, to alter up to two letters of a spell, as stolen from the Dungeons and Daddies podcast. So you came away with that. You also met an individual named the Tome Keeper, who... You've heard of Ephronamics before and heard people talk about it, and that's the entire system by through which your quests are sort of dictated. This person appeared to have a bit more insight, or at least was kind of following leads that made them think the current quest you were on was not valid, was not a quest per se, and that Marcus, the person who'd given to you, was working out of self-interest, I guess. You returned to the Church of Ultra Wolf to confront Marcus. Theo had grander plans to just burn it down, just get rid of it. You had a bit of a scuffle with Marcus. You did end up burning the Church of Ultra Wolf, and Theo ended up, under the influence of Marcus's command, forgetting about Marcus. The rest of you did not forget about Marcus. Marcus was carried away by some of the disciples of Ultra Wolf that you had previously seen in the church as it burned. And both Harrowhawk and Grace made out with a tapestry that was a depiction.
Okay, you said made out. I'm like, wait, what?
Well, I said made out with.
Yeah, I know.
And then there was a pause. Moment,
like, wait.
And I did recognize it, but I decided to move on, and now we're back. You guys made away with a tapestry that depicted a forest scene with ruins and sort of a bacchanal going on, some sort of body party in which Blossom was involved inside this tapestry. And when you peered upon it, once you got it out of the... Or actually... I think it was when it was still on the wall. Blossom was waving out at you. You tore it off the wall, rolled it up, and ran out with it. You currently have that. If you'd like to be on the streets of Fulcrum, like moments after all of this stuff happened, that's perfectly fine. Or we can fast forward to where you're somewhere a bit safer, like back in your in room. It's up to you guys. Where do you want to be?
I'd like to be safe.
Yes. Safe is good.
So you make your way back to the heart of the lake with your tapestry rolled up. You're in the triple, as it were. You, I think, kind of pushed what furniture you can to the center of the room and rolled this tapestry out so you can look upon it. But it is very large. It's big. And this in-room is not made to accommodate something of this size. So it effectively takes up, it kind of lays across the furniture that you've pushed to the center of the room, and then down onto the floor. And it's almost like a tablecloth that's just also the rug. This big, big tapestry, frayed at the top edge where it has been ripped, cut and ripped from the wall. And as you look upon it, Blossom stares back out at you, a concerned look on his face, and but also kind of puzzled and waiting. What do you guys do? Grace is there with you as well.
Hello.
You see Blossom open his mouth and speak, but you cannot hear him.
What is happening?
Blossom, I think you're muted. I think
he says some more things and goes to make some hand gestures, thinks better of it, and you see him walk back toward the party in the background.
Horace, he's speaking your language. Horace, talk to him.
Wait. I want to hold up my ear to the tapestry. Push it against.
You hear nothing. And Blossom is currently walking away. You think that if he were close, you would hear his footsteps in the dry leaves on the ground, or perhaps him moving through the brush, but you do not hear any of that.
Hey, everybody. At this point, the audio cut out for about 30 seconds, and Nick did an Arcana check and rolled a nat 20. All right, back to the show.
So you get your just filthy, nasty 20 on that Arcana. Obviously, this is magical, but you don't think it's any one set of, like, any one spell. You think it's some involved ritual that created this thing. And you know that if you use your identify spell, you'll be able to kind of pin that down. Though it doesn't look like anything you've ever seen, so you might not be able to name it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you might not be able to say, oh, this is exactly this set of spells or this ritual, but you'll definitely get more insight if you use identify.
I'll get going on that. I start laying out some incenses and like weird voodoo magic to like call out the name of the spell.
And a pearl worth at least 100 GP and an owl feather.
Yes. of course.
In that 10 minutes, is anybody doing anything else with this tapestry?
Can I try to get Blossom's attention by playing some harmonica, like a song that he's played before?
After about 2 minutes, he has walked back to the party and he comes back and he has a roll of parchment and a quill.
So he knows we're here.
Yep. It appears that way. And he scribbles on it and then he turns it toward you guys and it says, got any ideas?
Someone fetch me a quill in some parchment.
That'll do it. I just reach into my bag and grab a little book.
Very good. So I take the parchment and just like take my time writing things out. Take it like a minute and then I turn it around and it just says no.
Just like think about it. Write and rewrite it. You can see like the amused disappointment on Blossom's face.
Can I cast True Strike on it to see its weakness? Or wait, a brief insight into the target's defenses.
I kind of like that. Actually, like, that's not what that spell is for, to be clear. But I do kind of like that. And so, yeah, you cast True Strike. Get a sense that, like, you know, it is a tapestry. If you had left it to the flame, it would burn, right? Fire is a weakness to it. So it has no, like, acute defenses beyond that. However, there is some spell here. And the spell is like a cage around the tapestry. Like there's the defense isn't for the tapestry itself. The defense is for whatever's locked inside it.
Right. It's like a cage.
Grace is sort of along the outside.
Grace, what do you think?
Along the outside edge of the tapestry. She's just kind of like taking her two little hands and just sort of smoothing the fabric out. And she'll like do that a couple of times in one area and then like walk around the edge, like tiptoe around the edge and around the edge of the room to another place and then like do it again and like wait and just think to herself. Harrowhawk, you are ready with your identify spell.
Yes, or if you say so.
So you get a sense of this spell that has been cast on it. This like a very intense ritual, and you don't know, like I said, you can't really name it. It doesn't have a particular name or like specific set of parameters. However, it is very, very similar to what you think you know of making a phylactery. So whatever is in here is essentially souls, both trapped and like conscious and powerful. They aren't trapped in a way that's like, oh, they're in a weakened state and locked away so that nobody can get to them. They are put here for the purpose of display and power.
All right, I relay that to the party. Some sort of Horcrux. Party Horcrux.
So I want to write on the parchment, how did you get in there? And show it to Blossom.
Blossom writes on his parchment, turns it around, and it says, tricked. He writes again. He turns his parchment around, writes again. And it turns back around, and it just says, get help? Question mark.
I kind of like roll my eyes. I'm like, fine.
Can I write who on my slate and show it to him?
Blossom thinks for a second, taps the feather end of the quill to his lips. You can see him go to write, think better of it, and then write again. And he writes Ingrid on his parchment.
Oh, that's not who tricked him. That's who we should go see.
Right, that's what he's saying.
I wonder who tricked him. I asked that question.
He writes Marcus.
Who?
That weasel.
Yes. Thank you, Pat, so much. They don't understand who Marcus is.
He is the one who spread word of a pexitops in foul way. I look at Pat.
Did he? Who did that?
Marcus. We put him down to the church.
I remember that part. It was, Marcus was his name? I thought it was a church of Ultra Wolf.
Yes.
Well, I mean, they're the same person. He didn't. I feel like I'm missing something.
I'm going to write, where did he go on my thing and show everyone.
He ran away. That's it. He ran away. That's it.
He couldn't have been that important. I think we should just head to the hero, Ingrid Voxeth.
Yes, it's a good idea.
Should we rest?
I mean, you can do whatever you want.
I guess I ask Blossom's like, are you okay in there? I write down.
He like glances back over at the like clearly ridiculous rager that's happening behind him. Like off in the middle distance, in the ruins in this forest. And you can see as he turns his head back to you, he's like stifling a smile, or at least lessening the like beaming smile that he had before. And he just slowly nods.
Okay. I think we can take a nap.
Blossom sets the parchment and quill down in the foreground of the tapestry and walks back to the party.
Can we like fold this up and put it in a secure location?
Yeah, you can roll it back up. Like, I mean, and keep in mind, you roll it up, it's still like a 6 foot long roll of fabric. It's very large tapestry.
Hold on, before we roll this up, can I try something?
Go ahead.
Can I try to cast Misty Step to try to teleport into where I think it is?
Yes, you can.
I will do that.
You just sort of end up on top of the, like standing on top of the table.
All right, let's take a nap.
So you guys are fixing for a long rest. Grace, she like is kind of still staring at the tapestry. You roll it up. You know, make your intentions known that you guys are taking a rest. And she says, she's like thinking to herself still. And she says, I'll meet you at Ingrid's. I'll meet you there.
Okay.
Why
She looks back at you as she's about to leave the room, Theo, and she says, "Because I got stuff to do."
Okay,
that's it. Okay.
So Grace leaves.
Wait, Grace, are you just invisible? Clap twice if you're just invisible.
I don't believe she would clap twice if she was still here.
There's
I
no
clap twice.
There's no response from Grace. You can roll a perception, though, if you'd like.
That is a 6.
Grace does not appear to be here.
Cool.
So you guys rest. It is uneventful. At this point, yeah, I guess it's morning, all said. Like, doesn't necessarily work out exactly, but it doesn't really matter. You rest until it is dawn of the next day. So what are you guys doing now?
Yes, we just go talk to Ingrid. Very powerful. Very strong.
So are we rolling this up and taking it with us?
Sure.
Yeah. Yes.
Can I attach like a leather strap around each end and just wear it over my back?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to do that.
So you step out of the heart of the lake, and as soon as you do, you literally bump into the young scholar that gave you your first quest. The guy who came down from the partially built lighthouse in the docks district on the shore of the lake and told you about the island that was on fire, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
That guy, you literally bump into him, and he like stumbles back into the street.
One side, Poindexter.
He says, "Oh, it's you.
It's you."
He says, how goes your questing?
Hit a bit of a snag.
He says, "Oh, can I help?
You ever hear somebody giving out fake quests?"
He kind of scowls at that. He says, "Oh, yes, bad business."
"Well, we're working to resolve that."
He nods slowly. He says, "Listen, I've got quite a lot of recognition myself for giving you, you and your party, your first quest. There are benefits for that, you know, in the college among the scholars."
I look to my compatriots like, did you know that? I didn't know that.
You did not know this was a thing. I do not understand why it's important.
He kind of waves a hand. He says, "Oh, it's not to you. It helps me further my studies."
It is to me.
It helps me further my studies. And anyway, if you need any quests, I know that you can just go to the college, to the quest board, get quests there. But, you know, I could personally tailor some quests for you, get some things moving, the kinds of quests that you might want to take.
Can I write down the word Marcus with a question mark and show it to him?
He shakes his head. He says, I don't know anybody of that name.
I give him the OK symbol.
He says, "Listen, I have a apartment in the college," and he writes down an address for you, which is 656 Cherry Lane. He says, "If you need quests, go there first." If I may ask, what kinds of quests were you looking to complete?
Go out, fight a thing, bring back a carcass.
What he means to say is we've never really thought about it.
I have given much thought to quests. Save farm is a good quest.
What's your name?
He says, I'm sorry. Any extent, he says, "My name is Gerf."
Gerf? Can you spell that, please?
G-E-R-F.
Thank you.
Gerf, is there ever a quest where a bar has too much alcohol they need help to dispose of? Is this quest?
He thinks about it for a second. He says, "I have not heard of anything like that, but that doesn't mean that it won't come up." He says, I'll look, and he takes a note down.
This is a good quest.
He says, anyone else? Any preferences?
I shake my head.
He says, okay, well, this is good. This is a good start. If I have anything when you arrive, I will certainly give the quest to you first. He says, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. And
thanks, Gurf. You're my boy, Gurf.
He turns to leave and he turns back. He says, oh, and don't mention this. Others might want to try and compete, and I'm trying to stay ahead of the competition.
There's a competition?
He says, oh, in the scholarly arts, always.
Are you winning?
Did you say arts?
He did. He smiles. And he says, I think so.
Oh, good.
I asked him if he said arts.
Mm. He says, oh, yes. Yes, arts. He definitely doesn't. What did you say? You
paint with words and quests.
He says, well, I believe I could, yes.
I'd like to see it.
He like nods more to himself than to you, in a very determined way. And you can see him scribble a note to himself. Okay, so then he scurries off into Fulcrum. You guys are headed out the western gate, up over the into the hills to the cottage that overlooks the city.
So I'm gonna need someone else to do the talking. I feel like there's something bothering me and I can't figure out what it is, and it's driving me nuts, guys. I gotta tell you.
What do you mean?
Oh, you backed up? I have something for that.
No. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I just, in a bad mood.
I fucking hate the Eagles.
Exactly.
If you blocked up, we take a spell, we take a spell hold person, we turn into mold person.
This conversation's over.
It's just idea.
Fuck. You can shove that idea in your fur forever.
It's probably a good place for it. Oh, this is a good one. All right, so we're on the way to...
Yeah, so you make your way to Ingrid's cottage, and when you arrive, she is sitting cross-legged out on sort of the edge of the hill, like where you would very much survey Fulcrum from this hilltop. She's sitting there on the ground, bare feet. She is wearing a flowing robe, but like you can tell that there's like a belt to this thing, like a sash that can be tied tight and sort of bring the entire outfit in into a more like gi-like outfit. So that it's like right now she's in
lounge mode and she can get into combat mode.
Right, exactly. And you think that this appearance is deliberate. It is both a show of calm, but also like battle readiness all at once. You're supposed to see that this transition can take place. Her eyes are closed as you walk up the hill, and then she opens them, like kind of her eyes flick over the party one after the other. Each of you can give me a perception roll.
13.
16.
10.
18.
So Horace and Theo, her eyes like flick over the party one by one, and they also look to an empty space behind the party, and then she closes her eyes again. She says, to what do I owe the pleasure?
We have parchment on my back. I take it off.
Blossom's stuck in a carpet. Do you know how to get him out?
You see a smile crackle in corner of her mouth. She says, no.
Can I do an insight check to see if she's messing with us?
Mm-hmm.
That's a nat one. No! She's not, dead forever!
She's not messing with you. After a moment or two, Ingrid stands up, opens her eyes, and she walks over to her like big picnic table that she has outside. It's empty, and she gestures to it, Uther, and she says, "Let's see.
Here we go." And I unroll it.
You guys see the same scene, the forest scene sort of around the edges, and then a centerpiece of the ruins with the Bacchanal going on. Bacchanal. And Blossom is present, like very present and having the time of his life, really, in the center of this. And Ingrid looks at it, and she just like slowly shakes her head. She's not amused by this, and she just says, "Idiot." And then she pushes one edge of the tapestry from one end to roll it back up, so that Blossom can't see out. So she rolls like half of it back up to the center. And then she sits down. She says, "You have 3 options."
Ooh, that's 3 more than I thought we had.
She says, "Yes, you will not like 2 of them. And the third, well, I don't know you well enough to know whether you'll like it or not." She says, "Would you like to free Blossom or not? There's an option where you don't."
I write down yes.
He made a staircase for us. That was cool.
Yes, he's been helpful. He's not a bad guy. He's just, I don't know.
We're not sure if it's in his best interest, but we believe it would be the right thing to do.
She weighs that and kind of like tips her head to the side and as if to say, "I guess." And she says, "Well, you are engaged in an interesting game. One in which a lot of power would do you well." She gestures to the tapestry. She says, "If you take this to the stone anchor," and her eyes sort of flick over the group again, she says, "one of you can choose to become the Stone Herald." She looks at the tapestry again. She says, "Sure, Blossom will cease to be, but you will have what power he had."
"Well, that is interesting."
She just nods once.
"I thought he wanted us to be, unless I mixed up. What did he want us to be again?"
"He wanted us to be Herald of Storms."
"Right.
Oh, right. Okay."
"Because as far as you know, at current, the Storm Anchor does not have a Herald. And so, like, that's an empty spot."
"That will not speak for everybody, but I believe I would not feel as if we would have earned this power. I would feel..."
"It's a lot of responsibility. Is there paperwork involved?"
She gestures to the tapestry in response to you, Theo. She says, "You have bested in one way or another the current Stone Herald. That is grounds for your own ascension."
I write down what power.
She kind of moves a hand in a sort of like hocus pocus sort of way, like wiggling her fingers. She says, "All the power of the Stone Herald. You say he made a staircase?"
"He is a mason. Stonemason."
She nods. She says, "I did not personally witness what Blossom was capable of, but I'm sure it was impressive."
"Why would someone trap him in here?"
"Yeah, do you know what this is?"
She looks at it more intently and runs her hand over it. She says, "No." She says, "I think it was probably an attempt to steal his power for whomever trapped him here."
"It was Marcus, priest, a bad priest of Ultra Wolf. Do you know who that is?"
She shakes her head.
"A likely story, because it wouldn't make sense that you would know this guy, because you live out here and he was in the city."
"Do you know of Ultra Wolf?"
She shakes her head again.
I write down, "Are you a herald?"
She shakes her head.
When she shakes her head at Ultra Wolf, I kind of like open my mouth and start to be, and I'm like, No, not yet. Not the time.
Not yet. She says to you, Horace, she says, I gave up that business a long time ago. I never became a herald, though many of my colleagues wanted to pursue that end. Many failed. She says, your other two options, sort of like straightening up and going into like a more business mode, she says, are the Church of the Divine Aspect or Verox the Filthy. She says, both of them have sufficient power for this. She gestures to the tapestry. She says, I don't know the specifics of the magic, but I know that one of those two entities will certainly put you in a lot of debt to free your friend.
Oh, what?
She looks at you. She says, no, nothing of this sort will be done for free.
I write down cheapest? Question mark.
She thinks about that for a moment. She says, I have a certain pull in the Church of the Divine Aspect. However, my help does not come free.
I would prefer to lend you some of our wealth than the checkly. So if you took it, it'd be better if you took a cut and they take the whole thing.
What is it that you want? It seemed like you want money.
A stone. Not for me, but for Fulcrum. And she stands up and walks almost to the edge of the hill and points down toward Fulcrum. You can see the entire city sort of laid out beneath you. And while the sunlight comes from behind Ingrid in this sort of picturesque moment, she points down toward the unfinished lighthouse on the shore of Fulcrum, and then traces her finger out across the lake to what looks like another sun, smaller and lower to the surface of the water than it should be. And this seems strange to you, even though you've been in Fulcrum for a time, you've kind of noticed strangeness here and there, different denizens of the city coming and going. It's weird that you haven't noticed the sun before, or this sun. It's like not noticing a thing that's always there because it's always there. You know yourselves as people, you don't really look into the sun on a daily basis, but you know it's there. Its light is cast on you, so you know, hey, the sun's there today. And this seems to work in a similar way. There is the actual sun that, in one way or another, serves this world, this planet. And then there is this sun that Ingrid is indicating out on the lake. Seems to sit on a tower or some structure. It's hard to see as you squint down on it. She tells you, this stone is what will serve Fulcrum. It will serve me and will help you get your friend back.
Is this an actual quest or a quest, quote unquote?
She smiles. She says, oh, they have you believing that too.
But there was lines and there was the guy and then a snake almost ate us.
She nods.
And then we burned down a church.
She just like nods along with that. She says, some of that I think is open to interpretation. She says, who showed you these lines?
The tome keeper?
Bookman.
She nods at that. She says, interesting. I would have you test yourself against whatever you might find in that lighthouse. Take the sunstone, bring it back to Fulcrum.
I believe we are up to this challenge, quest or not.
She nods. She says, I believe you are too.
Aw, thank you.
I write, where in Fulcrum?
She shrugs. She says, it doesn't matter. She says, this is where Ephronamix rings true. You need only start the deed, the glory. And then she kind of like rolls one hand over the other in front of her. She says, then things take over.
Ever since she said that she thought we are capable, Theo's kind of been like not listening and just basking in that kind of pride of being recognized.
How long is trip?
She thinks about it. She says, once you get a vessel, maybe a day, two. I've never been.
I think that's plenty of questions. I mean, the part of adventuring is finding out for ourselves what's over at the horizon.
Yes, I am done interviewing people.
She nods. She says, will you be taking this with you? She gestures to the tapestry.
Can we keep it here?
It would seem inconvenient to carry that around.
He's not so big.
You may hang it up for the time being, I suppose, if you wish.
Or just keep it in a closet.
She rolls it the rest of the way up. When you say that, Theo, I will hold it for you. In fact, if you return to Fulcrum with the Sunstone, by the time you return here, Blossom will be released.
Okay.
So we are helping the church in this endeavor, I take it, indirectly or otherwise.
Yeah, she shrugs. She says, there's also Ferox.
Well, I can't imagine anything we would do for Ferox would be as glorious.
And the idea of spending more time of looking around and talking to people and finding this guy sounds exhausting. So let's just do this thing.
Is that all right with you, comrade question? Yeah, I'm looking at you, Bear.
So you guys make your way back to Fulcrum. I assume you go effectively straight to the docks.
Yes.
Oh, we could stop by and pass a note to the Tome Keeper that we've driven that false quest giver from Fulcrum.
Yeah, someone do that.
We might as well all go, because it's not like...
I feel like when we all go, I want to talk to people.
You say that as if you have no control over it.
I mean, I imagine, like, we can't really just go and talk to the Tome Keeper. So we just, like, find, like, a administrative person to be like, hey, tell the Tome Keeper this.
Couldn't we just tell, where did I put my notes? The guy we just talked to.
Gorth,
yeah. He's with the college, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just tell him.
Okay, but I think he's had enough renown from us for free.
Gorth?
Then we have to find
him. Yeah, then he owes us a favor.
No, we just...
We have his address.
Let's go to the desk. Let's go to the front desk.
Fine, you go to the desk.
I go to the desk and I tell them I have a message for the Tome Keeper to tell them that we give them our names. I do not put Grace's name, but I do say that we have driven that false quest giver from Fulcrum.
Grace helped.
Did she?
Yeah, but he didn't put her name. Yeah, she did, but that's fine.
She helped herself to some potions.
She helped as much as I did.
The gentleman at the front desk looks over, like just takes your note and just opens it and looks it over. And then he reaches on the desk. He says, standard commission. And he drops 4 bags of gold.
Okay. And then I assume they're all equal.
Yeah, they're 50 gold each.
Right.
All right. I give,
as always,
2 to Harrowhawk.
Harrowhawk gets 100. And I give a bag to Horace.
Cool. So after all the money spent on fantasy drugs, I am up to 105 gold.
And that pays for the bribe I gave the guard to hide the body.
So you guys make your way to the docks. There are any number of ships that you can hire for passage of varying costs.
Did we see that guy that ferried us over to that island that one time? Lorg.
He looks at you and he's like, oh man.
We're back.
So I see that. He looks, he like looks over the group and he pauses and he says, Grace? And there's no
response. She's most likely somewhere nearby.
He kind of just shakes his head at that. Says, I think you guys probably want me to sail out somewhere dangerous and almost die again.
I write Sunstone Lighthouse.
He kind of raises his eyebrows at you. He says, okay.
Okay.
And then he nods. He says, you guys are making quite the name for yourselves, so I think you can afford 100 gold.
Is this how it works?
We should negotiate.
That's how it works for me.
I think someone should negotiate here.
No.
We'll find someone else. Goodbye.
No. Am I doing this right?
Can maybe. I try to 50 on the on my slate and then like really like point really hard to try to intimidate him? 24.
Holy shit. I was like, you can't possibly beat what he rolled. He says, fine.
Hot damn. Okay.
He has like all these different bags on front, but instead of a baby in it, there's like a big book. And he runs over, pops open the ledger, and Lord Ledger back in the front carrier takes the bag, ties it to his belt, and runs off. He kind of, oh, they keep the funds over here so I don't lose it when I die.
How often do you die on water?
He says, sometimes. So you guys pile on. Is there any other like minor supplies you wanted to get before going on this journey?
Grappling hook.
A
grappling.
What?
Oh, grappling hook.
Yeah, grappling hook. It's very
grappling
good.
Grappling gun.
We should decide who is holding the quill.
You should decide.
Oh, did anybody roll for that? What is that, 1d4 or something? Can I? Wait, hold on. Wait.
No.
Can I? Is that like
unfortunately, no. I know where you're going, but no.
So all right. So I had one day with the quill. Now it's someone else's turn. Did we decide a rotation?
Rock, paper, scissors.
Okay.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
But someone else has to...
I throw rock.
I throw scissors.
No paper. Oh, no.
So...
All right.
Give it to Uther.
Everybody roll.
For the love of God, just give it to Uther.
Give it to
Uther. All right. Uther has the quill.
I use this wisely.
I don't believe you, but... It's fine.
I mean, by the time we get there, we have to reroll the die anyway. Is it a sailboat?
Yeah. It's got it also has oars in case that's needed, but yeah, it's a sailboat.
My delicate hands are not equipped to
So you guys sail out toward this thing. Yeah, it takes some time. A lot of it's just like very boring. Sailing straight for the thing, and as you approach you see that it is like this massive tower sitting out in the water. And like there's no you don't see any land that it's perched on. Obviously there must be something below the surface, but as far as you can tell it is just sort of jutting out of the water. This big sort of red gold stone tower. You don't necessarily know what it's made out of. It's just here suddenly. And when you, as you approach, you notice there's like a fog over the water. And as you get closer, you realize that it's not a fog, it's steam, because the water is like warm. Hot to the touch. If you like dip your hand into the water of the lake.
Do I have an egg with me?
Sure.
I mean, just
I'm a two on a nut check. Luck check. I don't have an egg.
Check.
If you hold your hand too long in the water, like you can put your hand into the water, you hold it there too long, it gets uncomfortable. It's very hot. And you can't, at this distance, you just can't look up into the top of the tower, because like the sunstone that is presumably there is just too bright at this distance.
How tall is the tower?
It's like 80 feet.
It's high.
I cover Beaker's eyes.
it's this massive, like, obelisk almost, with this glowing presence on top. You can't really see what the source of this thing is. It's just like this sudden appearance of this thing, even though you've been headed, like, sailing toward it this whole time. As you are upon it, it seems even more imposing. And Lore kind of slows the boat as you get close, and he says, "Well, I know you can't swim it, but I don't want to get too close." He says, "Do you guys have any plan for this?"
Far away from it, are we?
I would say you're probably a good football field at this point, 100 yards.
I would like to do an Arcana check, or nature check, or just general science check.
Yeah, what are you trying to determine?
I want to see if I cast Dragon's Breath on Beaker and have him breathe cold, it lasts for a minute, whether or not I could either freeze or chill the water enough that we could walk on it.
Yeah, go ahead. Arcana.
Arcana is a 12.
You know it will have some effect. You don't know if it'll freeze it.
Would it make it swimmable?
Not for you to walk on it. Very possible.
All right, that is my plan.
Again, you know, fire guy, not a cool guy, you know.
Well, if you're a fire guy, you can just swim normally because you're resistant to it.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point, Theo. Like, this doesn't affect you in the same way it affects everybody else.
Okay, so you want me to scout ahead?
I got to absorb elements.
Am I in the same? Am I tiefling? Does that do anything?
Are you? Do you have resistance to fire?
Yeah.
Or anything like that? Yeah, then it's the same. So for both of you, I always forget that you guys have that fire thing. For the two of you, this is like the water is noticeably warm. Like, you are able to tell temperature. It just doesn't burn you.
So they're like New Englanders in the South, and like everyone's they're like people from Texas come in New England, and like the 90s be like, this is fine.
Yeah. Right. Like, they just don't, like, they can recognize that it is hot and like the water is hot here, but it doesn't affect them in the same way.
So me and Horace can like go ahead and see what's what, and secure a spot for us if necessary.
How hot do you say the water is? Like, temperature wise, technically?
It's like if you turned your faucet all the way up right now. So you put, like, it's, you can put your hand in for a few moments, but it just gets uncomfortable to the point of potentially burning you if you leave it too long. So it's just like, it would be very, very unpleasant to swim for the distance that you need to swim.
Can I use shape water to make a 5-foot cube of ice and just row it over?
Does shape water make ice? I thought it just...
You could choose a 5-foot cube of water. You freeze the water, providing there are no creatures.
Yeah.
Okay. Could you just use the shape water to just kind of like make the colder water from further out flow in towards it in like a channel?
Change the flow of water only up to 5 feet in any direction.
Oh.
I think that's definitely cool enough. Like, the idea that you're just pulling in cool water behind you to make a channel for you to swim in, I think that's a perfectly acceptable use of this.
It's also, it's instantaneous.
Right. Yeah, you're using it like in a constant way as the ship sails in, so that you can do this, and then as you swim through, like, I think
yeah, your thing is like my idea, but doesn't use a second level spell slot.
I could make a bunch of blocks of ice and we just go in. I really like the image of us being on blocks of ice and rowing towards this thing.
Well, yeah, you have control here. You do what you want to do. One is potentially more effective than the other.
I'm choosing the ineffective. We're all on little mini glaciers.
Okay.
All right. Don't put me on your block of ice. I'm just going to swim.
Yeah, I'm also going to swim.
So Harrow, Hawk, and Uther, you're on these little mini glaciers. You're rowing in toward the tower. what I want to do. Give me a dexterity saving throw for speed.
That is a 6.
Interesting.
Uther. That is an 18. Sorry, it's very hard to see these stupid dice in the dark. The color combination is so bad.
Gemstone dice.
Yeah. Now that I'm, if I start struggling, can I go into a blade song to like turn this into acrobatics? Is really
so. What's happening is you're not struggling. Uther's pulling ahead of you. Certainly, mm-hmm. He's going faster than you. But you notice that your block of ice is melting. as do you, Uther. But you are confident you will make it to the edge of the tower before.
With prestidigitation, one of the effects is you can chill up to 1 cubic feet of non-living material for an hour. Can I like touch it up with prestidigitation? Be like ice.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you just start like icing the hell out of this thing as you row. You kind of limp in, but you do make it. When you guys get right up on the tower, so Horus and Theo, you get there first, and you notice like there is a bit of like rock around the base of this thing. Like again, you can't really see where it's sitting on land. That's somewhere below the water, but there is sort of a craggy rock formation that is around the base of this thing. So you can kind of climb up on that to get out of the water once you get on the tower. Uther, you make it, and Harrowhawk kind of limps in last with his ice like mini glacier melting, like just falling away just as he gets there. So now you're all on this like thin rock ledge at the base of this tower. You can see up, and the first like row of windows you see is at about 40 feet above. And the sides of this thing are like smooth hewn stone. You don't see a door on this side, but you could guess at a door somewhere along the base of this tower if there is one.
Are there windows higher up?
Higher than 40 feet? Yes. Another 20 feet above that, there are windows. And then there's the top of the tower, essentially.
Can I try something?
Of course, always.
I'm going to use the quill, and I'm going to hold on to everybody, like have people like climb on back, climb on me. I don't know if this work or not. I'm gonna cast hook beam instead of moon beam.
Instead of what?
Instead of moon beam.
Hook beam. tell me, Uther, what is the range?
120 feet.
There you go. Hookbeam. So, what is your intent? Is to
my intent is to do like a giant grappling hook maneuver with and pull us to the top,
To the very top, or to like the highest windows you can see.
I mean, I want to go as high as possible. My thought process is like, where is this? Where is the sunstone being held? I mean, we could do some reconnaissance if we wanted to.
Yeah. No, you did this. This is done.
The second level spell?
Because it's not dark out. The moon's it is dark.
Huh. Silvery beam of pale light down at a 5-foot radius.
Okay, so you have the you shoot this light, this beam of light up like at the top of the tower, and it, as part of its sort of activation, you are pulled up into the beam, and so all of you are attached in one way or another to Uther, holding on for dear life as he is just like rocketed up the side of this tower and into an incredibly sun bright light. You are all now like you kind of land somewhere. You appear to be on a platform. That is as much as you can tell because it is so bright here that you are blinded.
Oh, fuck.
And it is also very hot. So those of you, actually all of you, because you guys are just resistant, you're not immune. If you would all take 10 fire damage.
Oh,
and factor in your resistances as necessary.
Oh dear.
Reaction, can I cast Absorb Elements?
Is it a reaction spell?
Time one reaction.
Absolutely.
I am at half health.
Wait, resistance cuts it by half, is that right?
Yes. So like you learn very quickly that the place that you are in is very inhospitable to meat life.
My meat.
What do you guys do?
Turn it off. Cast Identify. So you have 10 minutes to cast, right?
So your hook beam spell, Uther, it exists now, like where you cast it up here into this light. It exists now as this movable 40-foot hook.
Right.
It initially pulled you up to it, but now you have this, you can move it, but it's only 40 feet.
And I can move it every turn. Let me know when I can move it again.
Oh, now, like anybody can do whatever it is they want to do at this point.
My intention is to put the beam in the middle of the room and take the sunstone with it. I mean, that's my intention. I don't know what it...
To where?
I'm going
to
hook it with them to me.
Right. But then we're like, you're going to bring it to you.
I mean, I don't know what to do otherwise.
Yeah, no, that's perfectly fine.
I mean, it could be like a giant claw machine. Where it's just like this beam hooks something and we can move it wherever we want it to go.
I think either way works.
We could move it into water. We could hook it and put it in water.
No, we have like some of the throw a blanket over it or something.
Throw a tapestry. Oh, we don't have the tapestry.
I throw my cloak over it. We actually do see the source, right?
No, you are on this platform and it is so bright that you are blinded. You can guess at the center-ish of where you are, but I will make you roll for it. So, Theo, in an attempt to throw your cloak over the sunstone, give me a disadvantaged attack roll.
Ooh, that's like an 8.
Not quite. Actually, no. I'm going to give that to you. You throw your cloak over it, and like very quickly, the blind, like you guys have that sort of lingering spots in your eyes, but you can get a sense of your surroundings as Theo throws his cloak over the sunstone. So you're at the top of this tower. The sunstone appears to just be floating in midair. Think about the top of the Orthanc from the Lord of the Rings movies. It's just sort of a platform on top of a large tower with like four pillars that just kind of house this area in a way, but it's really just open to the elements. And Theo has thrown his cloak over the floating sunstone and it almost immediately begins to burn. So you have moments of like clarity to do something. There are a set of stairs on one edge of the platform that go down into the tower.
I say we go to the stairs and try to think of a plan and go.
Good to me.
Yeah.
Hustle.
Yeah, go to the stairs and maybe there's something in here that we can use.
What if we get bucket water and we keep it frozen? We just keep freezing bucket water.
Keep freezing bucket water. You guys go down the stairs. You note that they kind of curve around, like that's the edge of the tower and down. You get about like a third of the way down them before it opens into a larger room. So at this point, do you want to continue moving down the stairs into that room, or kind of perch here? I think here you'd be safe from the blindness. But you don't know what's in the room below you.
Are we like outside of the tower or inside?
You were outside. Now you've gone down the stairs. You're inside essentially, but like the stairs open to the outside at the top of the tower.
But do they spiral down?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And like you are at a point where like the wall, like you go down the stairs and on your right there's a wall for a little bit and then it's going to open into the room below you, and sort of like those stairs will still go down as part of its spiral, but the room the top floor of this, the tower, whatever is in that room, will be on your right as you go down the stairs.
I think we should go in.
Nod, yes.
I soldier on. I take point.
Okay, so even for you, Theo, as you go down into this room, the heat is sort of stifling and uncomfortable. There is like a thickness and a humidity to it that is just unnatural. And what you see as you come down into this room is a massive form, some sort of creature. You think it's maybe vaguely humanoid, but is so sort of bloated and massive in the way it takes up this room that it no longer really holds that descriptor of humanoid. And it is attached to the walls by tendrils of some sort of like sticky mass that cradle its huge form just above the ground. But all these like tendons that are stretched and attached to the walls are like straining. You can almost hear them like bending against the weight of this thing. You're looking at a vaguely human and more lizard body, a head with like a big bone crest, almost ornate were it not for how like massive and gross this creature is. And there are all throughout the room, and that thing is suspended above the room, and all throughout the room there are these watermelon sized obsidian eggs, and they're all stuck to the walls and to the ground in that same sort of viscous material that's holding the massive body up above the floor of the tower.
Okay.
As you step into the room, this thing just kind of lulls its head to the side to try and see you, but you see it's so massive that it makes it hard for it to move.
All right. So Theo is a little, he didn't expect this, obviously. So he's like, all right, how to play this? All right, just be cool. Just be cool about it. So he just like looks up and is like, hey, how you doing? Just kind of like strolls in. All casual.
Did you say that? It tries to move its head more quickly. And then when it finally catches glimpse of the intruder in its midst.
Don't use the word intruder. That's never good.
And it like tries to scream, but instead just gurgles out this sort of thick ooze in this like the same type that's holding it to the walls. It just kind of gurgles out, hits the ground, like spatters on the ground, and then you feel that heat build. All of you just feel the heat in the room build, and you can tell that it's coming from this creature. I think it's time we rolled initiative.
But I was so congenial.
11.
I got 14.
17.
22.
Okay, so you all go before this creature and...
Surprise round.
Not all of you go after or before those creatures.
Those creatures.
It is Hairlock. Then it is those creatures. Then it is everyone else. And then it is big creature. Hairhawk, what do? You are standing on the stairs. You guys have come down into the room. So you absolutely still have the option of running back up the stairs. You do know that the sunstone will soon be uncovered again as Theo's cloak burns in a moment.
Hairhawk is like, hot is bad, and I'm going to immediately burst into a blade song with a bonus action. And then rush in and try to frost fingers the giant hot thing. If nothing else, just to cool it down to it doesn't kill us all. One thing it does is, well, it does cold damage. The cold freezes non-magical liquids in the area that aren't being worn or carried, but I would just like to have it so it cools this thing down. It needs to make a constitution saving throw. Would casting at a second level increase the level to which it counteracts the heat?
Yeah, sure.
I will do it. I will pour as much magic as I can into combating its heat thermodynamic onslaught. It needs to make a con save.
What's the DC?
14.
Doesn't matter. Okay. It does not.
It does not?
It does not.
Oh, I'm like, doesn't matter what go grass. Like, I thought I had like a plus 8 and saved. No. All right. Cold damage. 13 cold damage.
So not only do you hit it, does it not save, but you think that your cold damage is very effective.
Hot damn.
And it like screams out. It finally is able to scream as it's kind of cleared whatever nasty mucus blockage it had. And it is like terrifyingly similar to a woman's voice as it like screeches out. And you watch as eggs crack open. And now it's their turn. How many?
Who could have seen this coming? We fucking Leroy Jenkins this.
5 of these eggs split open.
Did you run up there?
What's up?
Nerohawk, like, run up to the thing?
Yeah, I had to get within 15 feet of it.
You had to get to the Frostfinger.
You're not, like, right up on it.
Oh, can I use the rest of my movement to back up after that?
Yes.
My movement is 40 feet.
So this room is, like, 50 feet in diameter. And this thing, this big monster is hanging in the center and the eggs are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
When you stepped up to 15 feet, Harrowhawk,
mm-hmm.
you noticed on crossing sort of that like 20-foot-ish threshold, that is where the heat was almost unbearable before you unleashed your frost fingers.
Okay. I will back up as much as I can.
Yes, these things. There are 5 of them. They're mad. They're little snake things. They're not quite little. They're pretty big.
Bring it on, come on.
But they're just coming out of their egg, so they're not that big. They're like they're like 3 or 4 foot tall, very like almost dragon-esque, flamey snake things. Fire snake for those who want to look it up. These things have a fast enough speed. So we're going to get an attack on Theo first. That's a miss.
Do they have eyes?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, that's fine.
You can't just ask someone if they have eyes.
Attacked again. I'm going to warding flare them.
Which so that is...
they impose disadvantage on the attack roll on a creature that can be blind.
Can be blinded. Can it be blinded? Yes, it can be blinded. Because it has eyes. Let's see. What is your AC?
16.
All right, you're good. So attacks the second time. You can tell it's about to hit. You warding flare it, and it like shrinks back and screeches from you. Harrowhawk.
Hello.
16, 19 to hit.
The 19 will hit. My AC is 19 because of Blade Song.
Shield? Do you have shield?
I do have shield.
At like 10 hit points?
Yes. I'll shield.
Okay. Then you will not take that hit. Multi-attack, though. Spell slots. Multi-attack does not hit. 17. Uther, it's your turn. You are not bit because you have a huge AC because you're a big bear and another miss. So it's like all of these worms are like coming up and snapping at all of you, just like slithering out of their eggs and immediately like sort of you can feel the uncomfortable heat around all of them as they slither toward you. Horace, you are hit 22 to hit.
That barely hits.
You take 3 damage plus
it was the poison.
4 fire damage.
Oh, fire. Oh, fire snakes, I forgot.
So do I take that or do I take half of that?
You take half of it.
So 2.
Yep. So you take 3 plus the 2. 3 is just the bite. And it's going to whip at you with its tail and getting good rolls at you. So 20 to hit. And you'll take 2 damage plus 4 fire damage.
Can I react?
Yes.
I'm going to use Hellish Rebuke.
Rebuke his ass.
And that's If I remember fire damage.
It's fire damage. Most of my things are fire damage, I'm just realizing.
That's going to be unfortunate. I don't know if he... Yeah, well, even with that quill, it would be tough to change fire to water. So yeah, you cast that. You can roll the damage, but you can also save your rolls because it is immune to fire.
Oh.
And you can tell that directly. Like, you cast a spell, hits the, like, goes off, this flame engulfs this little, like, wormy snake creature.
And you could turn it to Cellist Rebuke and have it do sonic damage for, like, thunder damage.
There you go. Well, he doesn't have the quill, but...
If you did, you could.
Excellent.
And the quill is already used today.
Yeah, it's true. So, you can see it engulfs this creature, and the creature just does not care at all. Like, these things are immune to fire. Now it is you guys' turn. So that is being everybody but Hairhawk. Hairhawk has already gone for the round.
I was just going to AoE these guys.
I would do the same thing. So,
yeah, I would like
33.333, repeating, of course, chance of survival.
Are there any unbroken eggs?
Oh, plenty. Many, many dozen.
Would you say... Well, I'm going to Radiance of the Dawn, Channel Divinity. So I present my holy symbol to dispel any magical darkness within 30 feet, and each creature that does not have total cover makes a con saving throw and take radiant damage for half on success.
That's also your party.
Is that us? Yeah.
They're not hostile.
Oh, I thought it said each creature, not each.
Each hostile creature.
Okay, cool. What was the save again? Sorry.
DC 13 con. And I got only 8 damage. 8 radiant.
8. Half on a save?
Correct.
Okay. So two of the worms are nearly obliterated, but not so. Everybody else... Take some damage, but...
All right, so as a bonus action, I'm going to cast Spiritual Weapon. So just a giant, or just a little larger replica of the shield I have appears next to one of the very hurt snakes. Just tries to pound it, flatten it. I rolled a 13 to hit melee spell attack.
Yeah.
For 9 damage.
Smashed, obliterated.
How many snakes are on us right now?
4 now.
All right, there's more to come.
Potentially. So that was Theodore. I need some Horus. I need some Uther.
I'm going to cast Spike Growth. I'm going to cast it from the edge of where we are outward. So like it's a 20-foot radius. So I want to position it so like the edge of the circumference of the circle like is right at our feet in front of us, and then it extends outward. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So most of the circle is just in the room, and it gets all these like twists and hard spikes and thorns all in it in the ground, and it becomes difficult terrain, so they can't move very fast through it. And then when a creature moves into or within the area, it takes 2d4 piercing damage for every 5 feet it travels.
Okay.
And I can make the ground look camouflaged and natural, like the stone floor or whatever it is. They just fucking know there's spikes everywhere.
Yeah, so you cast it and like the ones that you're fighting are all in it already.
Right, but I'm worried about like we're going to get fucked up by even more of these things.
More
if they need to move around to hit us, you know, readjust, fill in the gaps. And as a bonus action, I'm going to healing word Quetzal Man.
Hairhawk?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
You get 1d4 plus 4. That is a 3 plus 4, 7.
Yay.
Okay. Horus.
How many are alive? All of them?
No, one's been smashed. So there's 4 of them. I will say the one next to Harrowhawk has been killed. So there's one that's still sort of like out in the middle-ish of the room, nearer to like the hanging creature, the brood mother, if you will. And the other four are just like right up on you. There's one next to you, one next to Theo, one next to Uther. And then the last one is like out closer to the brood mother.
Can I Eldritch Blast this guy next to me?
Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to impose some sort of disadvantage for a ranged attack in melee range.
Oh, is he in?
Yeah, he like bit at you.
Oh, because he hit me. Yeah. Hit you.
Yeah. So if you want, you can do that. It's disadvantage. Or you can do the ones near your companions.
I already said I'd hit this guy.
Okay.
Get this guy out of this nine. Guy.
Nine to hit?
No. Unfortunately, not. So your Eldritch Blast, you fire it down at this thing, and it just sort of like quickly coils around to dodge it. You note that these things are strangely agile for just having hatched from these eggs that you're seeing. Harrowhawk, it is your turn. Or I'm sorry, no, it's not. It is the Broodmother's turn.
My apologies. Oh, no.
My deep, deep apologies. So she's going to screech again, and five more snakes are born from eggs. These travel toward her. I would say, give me 2d4 rolls, Uther. Give me three of them.
What rolls?
2d4 for your thorns, your spike growth.
How many of them?
Three.
Two plus four. Plus, so that's the first one. So that's six. Another four. A one. And then two more. Oh, man.
Six and five.
Four and three. Seven. Six, five, seven.
Six, five, seven. Thank you.
Yeah. It's a lot of D4s, and I only had one with me.
Yeah, I gotcha. So these, the more of these snakes hatch from eggs at various places in the room. Some of these things are affixed to the walls and the ceiling, so they crack open and like plop these snakes down. Three of them have to slither through the spike growth and so take damage, but they move toward the brood mother and not toward you guys.
All right.
And then it is Harrowhawk's turn.
Should I do the funny thing or the tactical thing?
Funny thing.
Okay.
I would do something that involves the duck.
Right.
Ooh.
Quack.
Describe. So the broodmother uses its voice, scream, to summon more baby spawns. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Correct. Huh? And you know, and you alone know that it is uncomfortably hot. In her, like nearer to her.
Okay.
Should I cast silence on the brood mother next turn?
Would you suggest? What sort of check would I have to do to figure out? Would she be able to summon more spawn if she were laughing, perhaps in a hideous manner?
Yeah. No. I know what you're getting at. Give me a.
It's a natural two. Whatever it was. I cast a dragon's breath on my duck to have it breathe cold, a breath of cold, and, you know, beaker to me! And we launch into battle with him. Are any of the spawn hurt already? Actually, no, I'm going after the big hoss. I'm going to try and have Beaker do a 15-foot cone of cold. Everything in that try to catch the broodmother and as many babies as possible. They all need to make dex saves.
So we've got saves from the broodmother. How much was the damage?
Eight. If they fail,
still doubled as vulnerability, and then you kill regardless. Kill three fire snakes, and the max damage was 16.
If they fail, it was eight. If they succeed, it was four.
Oh, okay. So you kill three of the fire snakes, and then two of the ones next to her are still living. You had
Beaker had to go like up above the snakes that were attacking you.
Okay.
To hit the brood mother. Did you rush in with Beaker?
I guess I don't need to rush. It's like for flavor, like Beaker to me and like go, but I actually don't go that far because I don't need to. I would like to use my action to cast Toll the Dead on the Broodmother. Needs to make a wisdom save.
No, she fails that.
Ah! Come on. That is 9 necrotic damage as my tattoos like warp into this like weird voodoo pattern and just got wah, dong, and these weird voodoo flames appear around it. It's very spooky.
You could see that she just sort of like is racked by this. Her whole form sort of shudders and some of that like mucus flies over the thing. But you can also see that when you hit her with this Toll of Dead, that there is like an intensifying of like an inner flame, right? She's just like a very warm creature, uncomfortably so. And when you hit her with this necrotic damage, you can see just kind of tears along the flesh where flame starts to kind of like spurt out.
Oh dear.
Like spits and stops. So there are still spawn next to Horus, Uther, and Theodore. So each of these are going to attack. So Horus first, for 17 to hit.
Yep.
You take 2 damage plus 3 fire damage.
Does that round up or down?
Down.
Always down.
And then the second hit from that guy misses you. Uther.
Yep.
18 to hit.
Oh man, that's my AC.
Fuck you, fire snake biting you. 2 damage plus 3 fire damage.
Oh. All right, I don't like it.
And 20 to hit.
That's
with its tail. 4 damage plus 3 fire damage.
Don't like that either.
I will warding flare the first attack from the snake, so it has a disadvantage.
Okay. Miss. Second attack. What's your AC?
16.
Miss. That's all those guys. And then there are 2 that are next to the broodmother, and they attack the broodmother.
What?
Oh, that's no good.
One of them hits. They just like bites in. Like latches onto the broodmother, then releases, and you can see that flame just sort of like spits and starts again out of the wound that this thing has created. The other one doesn't hit.
I don't want to be doing the same thing as these guys.
Yeah, that's bad.
All right. Now it is the rest of you.
I would like to use a bonus action to use my spiritual weapon to attack this snake in front of me. 22 to hit.
Oh, yeah.
That's 10 damage.
All right, that is destroyed.
All right, how far away is the brood mother from us?
You are you're at the edge of the room, so you're about 25 feet away, right? Didn't I say the room was?
Yeah.
What did I say the diameter was? 50 feet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I will center a silence spell on her. So for the duration, no sound can be created within or pass through a 20-foot radius sphere centered on the point I choose within range. And creature object entirely inside the sphere is immune to thunder damage, and creatures are deafened while entirely inside it.
Hmm. Interesting.
And I will back up, I guess, a little bit onto the stairway without going up.
Okay, gotcha.
I'm going to thunder wave.
Good call. Good call.
So, okay, wait. Wait a second. Wait a second.
I'm trying to imagine you in the darkness of your house trying to do this right now.
I am like standing next to my desk. I've got the book open. I don't have a lot of my notes, but I remember most of the stats, and I have written down stuff on scratch paper, so I had some of it.
I'm imagining a candle next to you, though.
Yeah, an old-timey lantern.
I support that.
But like that was there from before the power went out.
Yeah, it was already lit, and you just like the power goes out and you just draw it closer.
It's time.
Aaron, what do you think? I take care of the ones in front of us and you try to take care of some of the ones that are far away.
I can try. I haven't been rolling very well.
What do you add for hit points?
7.
Yeah. I was about to say, it can't be good.
No. Wait, if I cast guidance on you, would that help you?
I don't remember what that does. What does it do?
I touch you, and then you can roll a 1d4 and add that number to one. Oh, it's one ability check. Never mind.
Well, so that's your whole action to do that, so it's probably not.
Yeah.
You should probably just snipe the shit out of one of those snakes.
Okay. So you're thunder waving, knowing
the stuff in front
what
of
silence
us.
Does. Great. Okay.
I was going to thunder wave anyway, so it's just a. It just worked out. So they have to make a con saving throw. My spell casting modifier.
Do they?
Right?
Yeah, so they don't, because they're going to not take any damage because they're immune to thunder damage.
Even
but they will still in front be pushed of us? Back. Because the silence is a 20-foot sphere, right?
Right, out from the brood mother.
Right. And the room is 50 feet in diameter. So, oh yeah, I guess the ones right in front of you were going to be...
In my head, I was damaging only the ones in front of.
Yes. Yeah, that does make sense. Okay. So con save.
Yeah, 14.
There are three left. One saves.
So I rolled a 6 and a 7, so that's 13 damage. So one takes 6 damage, and the other ones take 13.
You killed 2 of them. The one in front of Theo is still alive.
Okay.
Well, actually, it's not in front of Theo anywhere. Also, it's pushed back across your thorns, and then it dies anyway.
All right, good. And then I'm going to use bonus action to healing word Horus for 6.
Isn't that a second spell?
It's a bonus action. Oh, no, you're right. I can't do that, can I? Because it's a spell. Never mind.
Can you not cast 2 spells in a turn?
It has to be one's a cantrip. One has to be a cantrip.
D&D 5.
You can as long as the other one's a cantrip. So I'm going to use a bonus action to turn into a motherfucking bear. I turn into a
bear.
What?
Bear.
Turning into a bear?
But he was already a bear.
What are you trying to tell me?
That's the stand-up kind.
Are you trying to tell me I can't turn into a bear?
Are you a different bear?
You don't get it. Old bear. You just don't get it. I'm a brown bear that looks exactly like I look, but I'm a brown bear.
It's a 4 bear. 4 feet
bear.
But
now you're concentrating.
Yeah, now I'm just a big... Now I just get down on all fours.
Yeah, it's 2 feet bear instead of 4 feet bear.
Exactly.
Or 4 feet bear instead of 2 feet bear.
Also, now I have 34 hit points. So
there you go.
So there's no more guys in front of us. There's just the brood mother and the snakes around her.
Correct. There are 2 snakes still next to the brood mother. And there is an area of silence. You cannot hear any sound from that area. Also, Beaker is in there.
You would hear, I was going to make a quacking noise and realize you can't hear the quack.
Yeah, you can't hear. But nothing right in front of you guys.
Can I Eldritch Blast the Broodmother?
Mm-hmm.
22?
Oh, no.
Is that bad? Yes, that hits.
It seems like the Broodmother might be some sort of like firebomb. Remember, the snakes are trying to kill the Broodmother.
Yeah, I mean it. It is, you might be right, but it is too late.
Yeah, I know.
How much damage do you do?
10.
10 damage. Okay. does Beaker have hit points?
Probably not anymore.
Well, does he like on paper, does he have hit points?
Yeah, he has owl stats, which is, I believe, 1 hit point.
Oh. What happens when Beaker dies?
He just kind of boinks out. I can resummon him later.
That's what I thought. Okay. So what happens is... Shit. See, I wish I knew... See, this is the problem. This is the dilemma I face, gentlemen. Is that on my notes, on my computer that is off now in the darkness of the night...
I cast Magic Missile on the darkness.
I know. I know the radius... in which this effect happens, and I think it might be the whole room, but I can't remember.
Cliffhanger. So cliffhanger. Cliffhanger.
All right. So, yeah, I think that that's right. I think because if I say it's the whole room, like I'm not positive. If I say it's the whole room, it feels cheap because I don't see it on paper in front of me. You know what I mean? So, what I will say is that the
beaker's gone.
The beaker's gone. But the Eldritch Blast streaks out from Horace's hand through, like, you can hear the kind of like Eldritch echo every time he casts a spell. As soon as it breaches that field of silence, it just out, and it is just this bolt of energy flying across the room. It hits the broodmother right in the chest, and you can see just a vertical line of flame just sort of rip open her form, and flames just start pouring out as if they're trying to claw their way out from her chest, and flame erupts in an area that we will determine next week. And we will end the session there.
McMallet's old-fashioned RPG is Pat O'Malley as Theodore Gleam, Mitchell Wyatt as our DM, Nick O'Malley as Harrowhawk of the Quetzic, Aaron McDevitt as Horace Tharm, and Joe McDonough as Uther Throrborn. We do not advertise this podcast. It is all done by word of mouth. So if you like what you heard, please spread the word around. And if you happen to have some time, you can rate this podcast on iTunes. Apparently, it really helps or something. If you would like to contact us, you could send us an email at mcmalletspodcast@gmail.com. It's all one word. We would really love to hear from you. Thanks so much for listening, and we will see you all in a few weeks. See you soon.